History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, if only we will take the initiative to ask a few questions. And of course, employ the patience as stories from decades ago start filtering back to the surface. If we do all that, we're going to end up with awareness and perspective we might not be able to acquire any other way. The idea here is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The man we have the privilege of visiting with today has spent more than half of his life in Modesto, California, where all his friends call him Gabe. Melvin Gablehouse grew up in Nebraska. He spent 20 years in the U.S. Navy, and he has the sailor tattoos to prove it. But the uniqueness of his story is that two of his most intense experiences, one in which his life was spared and another in which he risked his life to save others, both took place a little closer to American soil than you might expect. We're going to get to that, Gabe, but let's get started with the early years. What all do you remember about your childhood out in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Well, I guess it was a lot different than it would be today. Just school, chores. I guess that's about it in those days.
And I know you had a couple sisters. Were you the oldest of the three?
I was the oldest, yes.
So that means you probably got the best chores, right?
More or less, yeah.
Just out of curiosity, what were those chores? I'm just thinking they might be different from what young people have to deal with today.
Yeah, well, working in the yard, pulling weeds and just taking care of things.
And you were growing up during the days of the Great Depression.
Right.
Do you have some memories of what that was like compared to, you know, what things are like now?
I compare that with a lot what's going on today with all these politics that's going on today, all the Hitler stuff in those days. You've heard a lot about that all the time, comparing it with what happened, some things today. We really didn't have radios at that time, and I used to build crystal sets for everybody. So we had crystal sets that get one station, maybe two, if he's lucky. Yeah.
Thinking about that, what would you be able to listen to on that crystal set? Were you picking up baseball games or just...
Oh, no, just news, mostly news, yeah. What's happening on the farmland and stuff like that.
And, you know, a lot of folks who I've talked to who lived through that time in the Great Depression, some say, hey, things were really tough and I saw my dad lose a job or we had to move. Others said, you know, I didn't really notice it at the time. Did you have an idea that times were hard, that people were struggling?
Oh, yeah, we knew times was rough. But we pretty much managed to have meals on the table every night. And my dad worked hard all the time, so it was a little easier for us than it was for a lot of them. And we lived in a neighborhood where everybody helped each other.
And since you say that, I'm wondering if maybe you have an example of that, because these days you don't hear so much of that. You hear a lot of people saying they're almost afraid of their neighborhoods or their neighborhoods. What were some ways that neighbors helped each other back then?
Oh, in almost every way. If there was a sickness or somebody needed help, or everybody just was different. Everybody helped each other. They talked of each other.
Do you remember as a boy having some ideas in your head of, hey, when I grow up someday, this is what I'm going to do with my life? This is what I'm going to do or who I'm going to be?
Well, not until about 1939, I guess. We made a trip to California. I kind of sensed after that I just wanted to go in the Navy. That's what happened.
Where did you go in California, and what did you see that put that thought in your mind?
Well, we came to California, down around Fresno, down around the grape vineyard and stuff like that. And then from there, we went to Arizona. We had seen relatives in Arizona, yeah, and Merced. Had relatives in Merced, too. Yeah, it was great.
Was it just the climate or the landscape that was different from where you came from, or what was it that you think really got your attention?
Everything was different. Had bigger grocery stores and shopping centers and everything else was different, yeah, from a small town, yeah, a lot different.
So 1939, you come to California, you get a taste of life out here, and you said it made you want to join the Navy. Did you see some ships somewhere?
Yeah, around San Diego or somewhere, I guess. I seen ships.
But then you went back to Nebraska and finished school?
Not long.
Yeah, because there's something we need to straighten out here, and I think the statute of limitations should be up by now. But when you enlisted in the Navy, you were only 16.
Right.
And you weren't supposed to be able to get in at 16. So how did you pull that off?
Well, my uncle and I went in at the same time. He was 17. I was 16. And I changed a birth certificate. The date on it from 1925. 1924, that kind of got it. As a matter of fact, we went to the recruiting office, and after the recruiting, one day we went back home after all this, went back home, and my mother said to me, she said, you know, that makes you older than your uncle. So we got back to the recruiting office the next day, and you know what the first question was? Who's the oldest? And I said, I am.
Well, I've had a lot of guys who've told me even when they wanted to go in at 17, their parents wouldn't sign for them. They wouldn't allow them to go. But your mother was in on this. She knew you were fudging that right. certificate?
Yep, she did. Yeah.
And had you finished high school yet or no?
Nope. Put my books into high school and they're still there.
What was the pull? Why was that such a motivation? Because this was before the U.S. is in World War II. This is 1941, before Pearl Harbor. And you're 16 years old, and you wanted to quit school and join the Navy. What was it that made you want to do that?
Instinct. Just something that was there. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew how long I wanted to study. Yeah.
You mean you knew you were going to put 20 years in at that point?
Yep, sure did. Yep.
Was there someone else you knew that had done that, or where'd that come from?
I knew one guy that went in the Navy and probably in maybe 37 or 38. I think I only seen him one time back home after that. Just instinct, wanted to do it.
All right, so you're 16, you quit high school, you join the Navy, and of course they're going to send you to boot camp then, right?
Right, we went to boot camp, and it was full, and they sent us back home. And they called us up later on, I guess maybe a couple of months later. Because I know when we got back, we had payday, $21 a month.
So if I'm doing the math right, you must have been back home in Nebraska when Pearl Harbor was attacked?
Yes, that's right. That's true. Just declared war.
Because that was a Sunday morning when it happened, at least morning time out in Hawaii, a little later in Nebraska. Do you remember where you were or how you found out about it?
I was home in Lincoln. Yeah, declared war.
Did you hear that on your crystal set?
No. Word of mouth, I think.
Yeah, you said all you neighbors helped each other out, so maybe a neighbor came by and said?
Probably, yeah.
So did that mean you had to report again right away?
No, just waited until they got ready for us to go to boot camp. I don't know if that rushed up, but that probably did not because they didn't have room. At that time, the boot camp was all full.
So it wasn't until January that you got to go to boot camp?
Right, yeah, in the Great Lakes.
Big city.
Yeah. We went to the boot camp, and from there, graduated from boot camp and went to Naval Armory in Chicago, foot of Randolph Street in Chicago for gunnery training.
What kind of guns did you learn to use?
Old guns, they don't even have them anymore. They would call them 350s, and we worked with a lot of sidearms at that time, 50 calibers, 30 calibers, yeah.
Well, and I guess I should ask you, too, because we know what happened in hindsight now, but at the time, here you are, 16 years old when you signed up, still 16 when you head off to boot camp in early 1942, but now there's a war going on. Did that change your mind at all about your desire to serve?
Nope, just stayed right on in there. Graduated from gunnery school and was assigned to what they called armed guard. We were gunners, gunnery people. My first ship that I had after I left Chicago, went to Algiers, New Orleans, and checked in there, and a few days later caught a ship called the Samuel Q. Brown, was an oil tanker.
So that's a merchant ship that you're a Navy armed guard on.
2 days out, we got torpedoed.
2 days. You lasted a whole 2 days in the war before you got hit.
Yep.
So this is May 23rd, 1942. You're still 16 years old,
yep.
And your job is to defend this merchant ship. And so tell me about that day, May 23rd, 1942.
Early morning, boom, got torpedoed.
Where were you?
I was up on one of the decks next to the bridge. It was early morning, and I was asleep at the time. And I was one of the lucky ones that got to a lifeboat. A lot of people didn't, but I got to a lifeboat.
I know that's a long time ago, and we're talking almost 80 years ago now.
Right.
What woke you up?
The big bang. Yeah, and fire. Tanker. Yeah, oil.
This is an oil tanker. It gets hit by a torpedo. That's not a good result.
No. No way. Wow. No.
So it looks like the crew of that ship was 39 people with a complement of 16. I'd say, what was it like before you got torpedoed? But you're 2 days in, so you didn't probably even have a feel for how the ship operated yet.
We're out of the Mississippi River from muddy water into clean water 100 miles southeast of Cuba. And that's the way we got it.
So that was a German U-boat that got you?
Yeah, 103.
You know, there aren't too many people still with us who can say they got sunk by a German torpedo.
That ship was probably one of the first few ships that got torpedoed in World War II.
Were you aware that that was a possibility? Were you aware of the threat?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's one of the reasons they want armed guards on the ship, right?
Right.
Okay, so it's early morning. You're asleep. The big bang and the fire, an oil tanker on fire, wakes you up. How did you get off the ship?
I was lower than a whaleboat. They call it whaleboats, yeah.
Do you know how many guys didn't make it?
Not exactly. There was some. I never did know how many. Some of the gun crew. I was in charge of a gun crew. And there were other merchant marine men that got killed, too, where that hit. Why? Towards the engine room of the people down there. They never got out.
So if you had been below deck instead of sleeping up top.
Good chance.
You wouldn't be here.
Wouldn't be here.
And there's kids and grandkids and great-grandkids and a soon-to-be great-great-grandkid who wouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's right.
And you weren't even 17. I just can't imagine what that must have felt like.
Well, you're young. You don't realize it. You just don't think about it, you know?
I know this is going to sound like a weird question, but it comes to mind because of some of the Merchant Marine veterans who I've interviewed who were in similar situations where their ships got hit. And they didn't, at the time, receive any veterans' benefits. And some of them still haven't received Purple Hearts, even though they were wounded. And you just kind of highlighted in your situation, you're a Navy armed guard on the ship.
Yeah.
There are merchant marine gunners doing a very similar job as you,
right,
who were killed. What's your opinion on that? Should they have been given the same medals and honors as someone in the Navy?
Sure, they should. Sure, yeah, definitely.
And I'm guessing probably you hadn't really gotten to know anybody all too well on that ship yet, huh?
No. Nobody, really, at that time yet, no. Just getting settled.
Again, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes. That happens 2 days into your Navy deployment. How did that affect your outlook or your perspective after that?
No bearing on it. Just kept going. More ships. She kept shipping out.
And when they lowered you to the whale boat, was there concern that even then you guys were still in danger?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, the submarine service talked to us. The crew came out and talked to us. They questioned the captain that was there, and somebody asked him for cigarettes from the crew, and they wouldn't give him no cigarettes. Told him to talk to the president. And they just gave us instructions. They just said, you're 100 miles southeast of Cuba, and that's the direction.
Were you wondering if you might be taken prisoner in that circumstance?
Afraid of getting shot. You know, the Japanese submarines, when they did that, they shot a lot of people.
Yeah.
But they were friendly.
So these Germans just wanted to sink your ship and then hang out with you.
Right. That's what they did. Yeah. They surfaced.
Well, and I guess I should ask, too, since your last name is Gablehaus, is that a German name?
German name. Uh-huh. Yeah, but they don't know that.
And they were speaking English to your captain?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't think most 16-year-olds have a day like that.
I don't think so. No. But I imagine it was probably people that are younger than I was. I imagine. I don't know.
So what happened next? They put you on that whale boat. Then what?
A destroyer came out and picked us up and took us to Cuba. And then from Cuba, we was put aboard ship and taken back to the States.
And again, I don't want to move on too quickly from this because it's such a unique circumstance that most of us will never live through. So as you're kind of floating away, or even as you're talking to the German submarine, as they're talking to your captain, can you still see the ship or is it already gone?
No, it's still there. It's still afloat.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it must be smoking pretty good.
It's burning.
Yeah?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the destroyer that came up finally sunk it. They threw some rounds into it and sunk it.
So you're 16 years old, and right there, May 23rd, 1942, you're confronted with the reality that in war, people die.
Yeah, true.
Did you think about the possibility that you could be killed?
Oh, yeah. When we seen that thing surface, that's what we figured they was going to do, but they didn't.
So here your mother had signed for you, gone along with you faking your birth certificate. Did you tell her about your ship getting sunk?
Oh, yeah. We came home, and when I got home, emergency leave, came back home. We had interviews from the paper and everything like that. So they all knew. That was in the right up in the Lincoln Journal, I guess it was.
Well, since it's time for a commercial break, and we know the power of the internet can help us track down articles like that, let's see if we can pull it up when we return. 96-year-old Gabe Gablehouse of Modesto, California is our guest today, a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Navy. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos of him as a 16-year-old sailor, and also what he looks like now, of course, and we'll be right back after this.